Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 project here in the Nerd Party Network, where me and Dallas make our way through the A24 filmography, look at their TV work, and are lucky enough to interview the people involved in front of and behind the camera about their work. In this episode, we turn our attention to one of A24's most recent projects, the six-part television show Moonbase 8. But first, Dallas, something we've not discussed in a long while, A24-hour news, and we've got a mammoth catch-up. I like to think of this as our manifesto of what we'll be covering for the next coming weeks and months.
Hopefully, I know, yeah, there's been, they were very, very quiet. Well, no, everything was all quiet on the Western Front in terms of A24 news, but finally, there's been a deluge, a tsunami of news coming our way. Of course, you know, given A24, we know there's going to be some huge news dropping just as soon as we finish recording this intro, as is always the way. They never give us a heads up as to what's coming out, but I think there was about three different items dropped this week, so we felt now was the time to catch up and make sure everyone is fully briefed on what to expect in the coming months with A24.
Absolutely. Well, yesterday, as time of recording, it was announced that the acclaimed director of Old Boy and The Handmaiden, Park Chan-wook, has signed on for his next project, a television adaptation of Viet Thanh Ngân's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer. So published in 2015 as a debut novel, The Sympathizer follows the story of a North Vietnamese mole in the South Vietnamese army in the 1970s, and he remains in South Vietnamese community as he is exiled into the United States. He then becomes a cultural advisor on a platoon-like film about the Vietnam War. So this is a very interesting one. I'm not familiar with the book myself, but what did you think of this latest news announcement?
I wasn't familiar with the book either, but I mean, it was just the phrase A24 working with Park Chan-wook for me was like, wow. I mean, he's up there with Bong Joon-ho as, you know, probably the sort of South Korean directors that are probably perhaps, well, can I say, most well known in the UK and the States. I mean, this is, like you said, the director of Old Boy and Handmaiden, and these were two sort of Korean films which managed to cross over to the, well, certainly to the independent art house cinema circuit and break out there. I mean, Old Boy was probably one of the first films to introduce me to Korean cinema, so this is very exciting for me. I was into a huge Asian cinema phase around about sort of 2000 to 2004, so when the Belmont opened up here in Aberdeen, I was able to see a lot of great films, and I think it was it Tartan Video? They did a great range of Asian cinema. So yeah, I mean, it's been a while. I mean, since we've had anything from him, I think was his last film. I know Handmaiden was the last one, but before that, of course, they had Stoker as well, which I personally loved. I know it maybe sort of missed the mark for a few people, being his sort of Western English language debut, but I still love that film. So very, very excited to see this. And yeah, I guess the war genre is probably one that A24 haven't really tapped into yet. So, and the fact that they're going to do it over a mini series is interesting to see. I mean, sort of recent war movies that are like, I mean, yeah, Spike Lee sort of recently looked at the fallout of like the Vietnam War with the Five Bloods. So yeah, it'd be interesting to actually finally get I guess an Eastern perspective on the Vietnam War, but something that certainly us Western audiences probably haven't really had before. It's always been from the, I guess, the point of view of the US troops. So it's going to be interesting to see what from the other side, I think.
What I find quite interesting as well, thinking about Chan-wook Park as well, is that you think of him as the director of the Vengeance trilogy, The Handmaiden, these big movies that are kind of quite instrumental in a lot of people's exposure to Asian cinema. How much he's kind of gravitated towards TV, really, since The Handmaiden. You know, he did his work on The Little Drummer Girl, and then he's been like the executive producer on the Snowpiercer TV series quite randomly as well. So, yeah, it's interesting to see that he's made a bit of a bedfellow with TV. But, yeah, I'm excited. It sounds like a really interesting TV project. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to covering that one down the line. A bit more of another mysterious project, and this one got announced this week as I think their aim is to make this our generation, well, a new generation's version of Scream.
Scream was my generation. As I said, yes.
That I was like, exactly. We went to see Scream, and that is Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. So a mysterious A24 project. So it will be starring Amandla Sternberg and Borat 2 star and Oscar nominee Maria Bakalova. So also talks of Pete Davidson and Miala Harrod are in talks to star in the film as well. So not much is really known about this one, but I did a little bit of digging. And apparently Bodies, Bodies is it's kind of a board game. So basically it's going to be sort of like, it comes from this like board game called Body Body that the characters play. And it's kind of a social deduction game like Mafia. Never played Mafia, which involves some players taking on the role of murderers, trying to kill others in the dark. The turning on and off of lights is key to the game, and so will be for the film too, apparently. So, yeah, I'm not a board game player like yourself, Dallas. Have you heard of the Body Body board game?
No, I can't say that I have. I will have to go off and do my research and maybe schedule a game for a... I mean, I'm presuming the actual board game maybe doesn't involve any actual killing, but obviously, you know, this one will. You know, I mean, it's a risky strategy, I think, for A24, I mean, to come out before it's even sort of filmed and basically say, you know, this is going to be every generation deserves a Scream. And it's like, well, you know, you're setting the bar very, very high for yourselves. Because, I mean, Scream changed the game, you know, back when, you know, it was, you know, everyone was really tired of your standard sort of slasher movies where it was just like a guy in a mask sort of stalking a bunch of teens who were drinking and taking drugs and having sex when they shouldn't have been doing. But, you know, Scream managed to sort of become the self-referential sort of kickstarter of a new subgenre, which then, of course, then went on far too long and became too meta, and then everyone got fed up with it. But of course, you know, up to the point where it comes back around, we get a Scream 5 next year anyway. But yeah, they're setting the bar high. But you know, A24 is, you know, is the brand to go to for elevated horror. So I'm going to be interested to see if they're going for a flat out more traditional sort of slasher type movie, which they haven't done, or whether it will perhaps maybe have a twist and fit in with the I'm sure it will have A24 vibes, but where it fits genre wise I'm going to be interested to see this one. But yeah, I mean, the cast, I haven't really heard out of much of the cast apart from Pete Davidson. I haven't really seen much of him. I still need to catch The King of Staten Island. But I was very impressed with Maria Bakalova from Borat 2. And yeah, I think her career is blowing up right now, as I believe the kids say.
Yeah, so talking of blowing up, the Zola trailer dropped for the long-awaited A24 film. For those not familiar with the true story it's based on, in October 2015, Zola King decided to recount on Twitter her crazy tale across 148 tweets. So she tells the story about her chance meet with this girl called Jess, who convinced her to go all the way to Florida in order to make all this money while stripping at a friend's club. However, when they arrived, they soon find themselves getting caught up with a pimp called Z that used them as prostitutes. So, yeah, the first film ever based on a Twitter thread. So this is a film we're kind of hopefully not too far away now. What did you make of the trailer?
Very, very in your face. I think definitely one for fans of Euphoria. It's got Coleman Domingo in it from Euphoria, and he seems to be having a whale of a time. And actually, everyone looks to be having a whale of a time in this one. This is, you know, the film which is going to put Riley Keough firmly in first place as the most prolific A24 actress. I believe this will tie her with Robert Pattinson on four films each. But I believe that Ralph Ineson is going to be chomping at his heels, because I believe he was recently cast in the Coen Brothers version of Macbeth, so he's got the Green Knight as well, so he's going to be up on three. You know, we're big fans of Finchie, you know, he threw a kettle over a pub, you know, what have you done? But I'm digressing away from Zola here, but yeah, no, I'm all in for this film. It's, I think it's, yeah, it looks like a mash between sort of a bit like American Honey meets Euphoria meets Spring Breakers, and yeah. I'm in, and I have not read the original Twitter thread, but I have seen the meme going around now, which was like, I think it's probably her first tweet or something that, you want to hear a crazy story about how I fell out with this bitch. It's kind of long, but full of suspense. And then everyone was putting pictures of other films which could have fit that. And I, of course, jumped on the bandwagon and put a picture of Midsommar. But I want to stress that the bitch, of course, was Christian in that one. But I did see someone sort of finding it amusing that a film which originally screened at Sundance in January 2020 has become a meme about 18 months later. So Twitter always hot on the pulse.
Well, one thing that we can 100% look forward to, we have a UK release date for The Green Knight. Insert audience cheer here. Yay. Coming just 1 week after the American release date on July 24th, we will have The Green Knight on July 30th. So I'm not even going to ask if you're excited. Of course we're excited. So, you know, I cannot wait for this movie.
Yeah, I know. It's been a long time coming. I did think I was going to be lucky enough to see it earlier this year because I managed to get a virtual press pass to the South by Southwest Film Festival, which, of course, was where, certainly from your interview with David Lowry, would have suggested a rough cut of The Green Knight was going to screen last year. So I thought they were going to hold tight and, honour their commitment to that festival, but it didn't turn out that way because, you know, they had already got their plans for the July release in America, and I believe A24 basically wanted to hold off. They didn't want anyone seeing it in advance, and they wanted to make sure. Apparently they were committed to a fully theatrical release for Green Knight in America, and it looks like we will get, at least for about 45 days here in the UK, a theatrical release for it here, and I think it's not going to be long before we can finally watch it, and then I can finally break out that board game, because the role-playing game, because I haven't really read it, because I didn't want to spoil myself, even though I've kind of briefed myself on the Arthurian legend. I want to still go in as fresh as possible to this film.
Yeah, I cannot wait for this, and I'm looking forward to being able to play, like, when social distancing rules lift, playing that board game with you as well. I just can't wait for this film. This was news that kind of broke today, so we've got some news that dropped on an episode we recorded and not a day after. Thank you, film news. But also kind of on the horizon as well, Netflix won the auction rights to make Beef, a 10-episode half-hour dramedy series from A24 that will mark the return of Stephen Young to A24 from Minari. So Beef follows two people who let a road rage incident burrow into their minds and slowly consume their every thought and action. So not to be mixed up with last year's amazing film from Russell Crowe, Unhinged. Are you looking forward to this half-hour dramedy series called Beef?
Yeah, I certainly am. It's, the talent involved is again enough for me to commit to watching. I didn't even need to. The A24 brand, you know, they were, Stephen Yeun is on role Minari, of course, fantastic, but even better, I think he was in Burning. I think he was just absolutely sensational in Burning. So, you know, his career is going on leaps and bounds ever since he got a baseball bat to the face a couple of years ago in Walking Dead. And Ali Wong, I enjoyed the comedy Always Be My Maybe. Yes, that's right. I got that right, I think. And it was a riff on Mariah Carey's song, but also it featured one of the greatest cameos of all time with Keanu Reeves playing himself. Just fantastic. So, yeah, I'm in on that one as well.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that as well. And at half an hour long as well, they've certainly learned from Comrade Detective, which was ridiculously overlong for a comedy series as well. So, yeah, I'm all on board the Beef train.
An American comedy should not really go over sort of 20, 22 minutes.
So, most likely our next movie review, depending on UK release, will be False Positive, which is dropping on June 25th in America on Hulu. So, not much is also known about this one, but starring Justin Theroux, Pierce Brosnan and Sophia Bush, not much is really known, but we know this much. It follows a pregnant character called Lucy, who sets out to uncover the unsettling truth about her fertility doctor. So, Dallas, I'm excited about this one. Pierce Brosnan finally joining the world of A24. He has become quite an interesting kind of actor these past few years. What's your thoughts on this one?
I think I did watch a very, very quick trailer of this one, and yeah, it teased me enough that, yeah, I'm intrigued to see that you know, Pierce Brosnan is, you know, best known, I guess, for Bond, but, you know, he's had a little bit of range since, you know, he's played a sort of a genial, then a slightly sinister sort of teacher and confidant in The World's End. He's played against type and certainly sung against type in Mamma Mia films. So, you know, a darkly sinister Pierce Brosnan, yeah. I'm intrigued by that one. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this one goes. It could be a Rosemary's Baby for the millennial age, perhaps. I just want to throw in, I've got one more bit of news. Have you heard the full cast list for the Macbeth movie coming out? Did you catch this one?
No, yes, I think I saw that one a wee while ago, but I completely forgot about
it. Yeah, no, it was a wee while ago, I guess, for us in terms of updating you with the news, but they came out with a more rounded out cast list for Joel Coen, not apparently the Coen brothers, just Joel Coen directing The Tragedy of Macbeth, which apparently will be in black and white, you know. Some great A24 films being filmed in black and white recently. And, of course, it was announced, I think, about a year ago or so that Denzel Washington will be playing Macbeth and Frances McDormand will be Lady Macbeth. But the cast has been rounded out with people such as Brendan Gleeson as King Duncan, Harry Melling, who played the young Dursley boy in Harry Potter, but has gone on to star in a lot of Netflix films recently. We've got Ralph Innocent as the captain. We've got Corey Hawkins, Sean Patrick Thomas, and also someone which I think you might remember from many, many years ago, an actor called Brian Thompson, who plays young murderer, who played the alien assassin from the X-Files, if you remember him. One of the great...
Oh
sort
my
of...
gosh, yes, and he's... And in Star Trek 2 as well, many a guest appearance in that.
Well, there you go. So an excellent sort of British and American cast rounding out the thing there. So, yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the Matt Michael Fassbender version of Macbeth, but this one has a cast to die for. So I'm going to be very interested to see how A24 adapts the Scottish play.
So Moonbase 8 follows three subpar astronauts in one of several NASA moon-based training simulators located in Winslow, Arizona, hoping to be the crew selected by NASA to travel to the actual moon base, whose construction is nearing completion. And the show stars John C. Reilly, Tim Heidecker, and Fred Armisen. So Dallas, when did you watch Moonbase 8, and what was your expectation and initial reaction going in?
I watched Moonbase 8 around about 15 minutes after you texted me saying you're good to do the Moonbase 8 episode this weekend, and I went on to Now TV because we'd discussed it that we were going to do it because it was on Now TV, and I realised that when I logged into Now TV that I had 6 hours to watch it before it was going to disappear. So I know we planned to do a Moonbase and Euphoria binge because... On Now TV, because everything was sort of dropping at the end of January. But yeah, I had a very limited window in it. So I binged it, thankfully. 6 episodes, 20 minutes each. I managed to squeeze it in just before the end of the time. But I have to say, I was surprised because I had not seen the trailer and I clearly had not read the synopsis, because when I discovered it was set on Earth, I was actually kind of surprised. I thought it was actually set on the moon, clearly. But no, so I actually really sort of enjoyed the premise of the sort of moon bases, at least 8 of them across the States where these astronauts were in full training. Because, you know, with all these sort of like Apollo 13 and sort of Apollo 11 films and whatever, you always see them sort of doing the mission, but you never see the training outside of, you know, that cinematic bit of them going around, being spun around to get the sort of zero G effect and stuff like that. So it was quite interesting to see. And, you know, obviously one of our favorite joint favorite films is Moon, about a guy alone on a moon base. So I was maybe expecting something along those lines, but a comedy version, and I was pleasantly surprised. And yeah, I was also thrown by the addition of a fourth crew member who was not in any of the pictures which I'd seen, a rather special one who I'm sure we'll talk about later on, who's had a very good week as of the time of this recording. So yeah, no, I was thrown by it initially, but I settled into it, and yeah, no, I enjoyed it actually. Yeah, what about yourself?
I was the same as you, Dallas. Like, I've been waiting for this show for quite a while. I'll kind of touch on to that bit next. But yeah, I'd been waiting a while for this show, but I was the same as you. I sort of cocooned myself from what it was actually going to be about. All I knew was it was about these NASA astronauts, and that's as far as it kind of went. And it's one of those ones I've just been looking forward for quite a long time. And one thing that surprised me when I just watched it was the same as you. Oh, it's based on Earth. They're kind of in isolation. And I thought, like, I didn't know what my expectations were going in. I was just glad it was finally here. And I just had such an enjoyable kind of afternoon with it. You know, it's, I think this is our sort of second out and out A24 TV comedy, sort of after Comrade Detective. And you know, we were certainly mixed on that show. But yeah, this one just seemed to really hit my funny bones. Like, I really like space and sci-fi, and as you say, kind of Moon is a film we both have a shared love of. So I was kind of predetermined that I was going to enjoy this kind of show, and I was surprised about how unexpected a lot of the plot was. It wasn't much of things that I expected. So yeah, it was just a really enjoyable show. And kind of as I touched on, it's been a long wait for me for the show. I remembered us talking about it in the early days, because I remember the sort of the teaser image of sort of the three main leads and sort of their NASA outfits, and it dropping on the A24 Twitter page years ago. And I kind of kept wondering, like, what's happening with the show? Has it been made? Has it been sort of cancelled? What's kind of going on with it? I remembered at one point when the Netflix show starring Steve Carell, Space Force, popped up. I was like, oh, that's that A24 show that I was looking forward to. I don't remember Steve Carell being in it. And like realizing it was a completely sort of separate show. And then sort of a few months ago, it dropped onto to Showtime. And after I'd watched it over the weekend, what kind of surprised me was sort of the show's development. It has been a sort of long period for it. The original premise of Moonbase 8 was that it was actually rooted in sort of the kind of an isolation horror of something like The Thing, about a group of people stuck in a remote area facing the unknown together in sort of the southern Antarctic. And it came about from a sort of National Geographic article that John C. Reilly had kind of read, and like they were really like between sort of the lead actors. This felt like a really appealing kind of story to them, and they sort of began to develop it. So about 2.5 years ago, they pitched this show to A24, and they'd recently come off of a rejection of kind of another show that they were pitching, where like, hey, let's go do a pilot, let's go do this, do that, and it didn't pay off. So they decided to talk to A24 like it was indie movie that they were pitching, going, we're not going to go in there and say we want to, you know, do a pilot, see where it goes from there. Let's pitch like an indie movie where it's like, you give us the money, we'll go out and make it, and then you guys do what you do with, like, you know, a whatever movie, you know, go pitch it to Showtime or Netflix or whoever about potentially picking this up. So the show was shot and finished 2 years ago, and it's been sort of in a period of times where it's been trying to be sold for 2 years, which was really surprising to me, because I watched the show and I thought, like, why would you not want a John C. Reilly sci-fi comedy on your network, you know, or a, you know, Netflix, whatever? Like, why would this not get kind of picked up? And I kind of came away from the show where I was like, why have we waited 2 years to see this show? It's not like it's been something that needed to be buried or anything like that. It was truly bizarre to me that it had such a long wait. It wasn't certainly a post-production issue anyway.
No, I guess actually the story you just told, or the production, kind of almost mirrors the plot of the show, where, you know, these three guys are basically working on the space, just waiting for that call up of when they're going to get onto one of the space missions. And then, you know, every episode at the end, it's like, well, I guess it's going to be a little while yet, and it's like just proverbially waiting for the call up. And it sounds like that's what the show had as well, just waiting to find the right distributor and the right thing to finally show it to the world. And I'm glad that it's finally found a home, because I think it's the kind of show which, you know, it's just six very short episodes, 20 minutes each. I think the solid cast is very good. I mean, Tim Heidecker is not someone I'm very familiar with. Sort of looking at his sort of IMDb credit list, I haven't really seen much he's done. I have to say that he did not make much of an impression for me. And as whaleboat captain Daniel Goobler in Ant-Man and the Wasp, I can't remember him in that. But other than that, I thought he was good. Fred Armisen, I'm aware of sort of like Saturday Night Live and sort of small sort of cameo roles and stuff. And then obviously John C. Reilly, been a huge fan of his since the Paul Thomas Anderson days, and then moving into the Will Ferrell comedy days. And yeah, I thought they worked really together. I thought each episode had a nice plot going along where they tackled different aspects of things they would that would normally come up in space travel, where it's like someone getting sick, what do you do? And then, you know, they've got an issue with the base, you know, how do they repair it? Or that's what they do, they move it entirely and stuff like that. I think there's a lot of potential in a second series to see where it goes. And there's clearly something else going on, potentially. It's sort of teased at the very end of the season, which kind of feels very similar to another show which is currently streaming on another channel, but I don't want to go into that just yet because I'm not sure if you've seen that show, because I don't think you have Disney Plus.
No, but I can deduce the show that you're referring to. So what did you make of this premise, essentially these astronauts working in isolation in the desert? I mean, obviously the show has been a 2-year wait to get to audiences, but it's really landed at the right time. Obviously it dropped in November of 2020 on Showtime, and we sort of join these astronauts sort of 200 days into sort of isolation from sort of the rest of the world. Obviously they still get supply drops from NASA, they get like the odd bit of sort of video calls from family, and there's the odd sort of sense of sort of tension and friction from sort of very normal kind of things that seem to kind of kick off between these group of astronauts. What did you make of this quite timely premise of the show?
I really liked it. And actually, speaking of timely premises, if this indeed was shot 2 years ago, then they managed to pull off quite the casting coup with the initial fourth crew member of the mission in Travis Kelce, the super, you know, American football player for the Kansas City Chiefs, because he won the Super Bowl last year, and as of recording right now, has just helped his team to the second Super Bowl in a row. So he's become like a huge, huge name in the time that they had since filming. Because I mean, I think they mentioned like the Pro Bowl ring at one point, but clearly that was a ring that he won before the Super Bowl. But yeah, no, I think in terms of timing, that's great. And there was one aspect that I wish would have continued throughout the show, and it would have been like a recurring gag, almost like sort of Spinal Tap, where basically the fourth crew member is almost interchangeable. If they'd almost brought in one every episode to, and then, you know, they either, you know, leave the program or end up getting promoted to a space mission ahead of them or something. I think that was comedy potential, which could have continued. But I understand when the chemistry between the three leads is as good that you probably want to sort of focus it on that and give each of those guys the chance to shine without diluting it by adding in a fourth member. But I think the shock value of the episode, of the first episode, was great. But I think it's just that sort of the randomness of it and the sort of fish out of water thing where, you know, I think it's a comedy of them taking what they're doing so seriously. Yeah, it's such an absurd and bizarre situation where they're in the desert, where everyone around them outside of it is just treating it as a joke, but they're taking it very seriously. And I think that's where they sort of managed to pitch it just right. I thought it was very entertaining in that way.
You touched on guest stars there. So here's a little preview of an upcoming interview we actually have with Moonbase 8 guest star. No, this guy didn't make it to the Super Bowl final, but that's Ted Parker, who plays Darren in the famous Quarantine episode, who shares his experience of working on the set. And what was that first day like on set for you? That long month kind of finally comes to action. What was that day like for you?
It was one day of shooting, and we got out of the hotel bench, and I had a young lady drive me over to the studio, and it was like it seemed like a carpool garage on the outside, but in the inside it was like beautifully built. They had an RV inside the place, a whole RV inside, and film crews and everything, and I was like, I'm home.
That's amazing.
And and I got to meet everybody, and it was like exciting. I was like, this is why I do this.
What was sort of the format like for any type of improvisation on set? Did you sort of have your markers to hit in terms of plot, or was it very much kind of a free-for-all, quite a relaxed atmosphere?
There was some improv, scripted, of course, but there was some improv that was allowed there. Once we got done with our lines, we were allowed to make up several things. There was a small conversation asking if Canada had a space program, which wasn't in the show. And we were also talking about, what are we gonna do with this lost astronaut that we found here? And I was like, oh man, the government's gonna find out about this. They're after us, man. It's the government, man.
And what was it like that one of those astronauts was John C. Reilly? What was it like to work with a comedy great like him?
He was very nice. He was very good. You don't know how bad I wanted to ask him for an autograph or something, but I was there to work. You know, I wanted to be. I wanted them to like me and be as professional as I can. And he was very, very fun to hang out with and everything. And there was also Fred Armisen. He was there. And Tim Heidecker. And one of my best memories of them was watching them, you know, they were just, they had this acoustic guitar and they were playing the song Wait by the Beatles. And that's going to stick with me forever. That's you amazing. Know, it's a good memory.
You and your sort of screen parents sort of really created quite a fun dynamic amongst yourselves. Did you sort of, you three create like a backstory together about the family holiday?
Not a backstory. I think the improvisations pretty much spoke for themselves. They were a good couple. They got along fine. They had a son who tried to get his career going, and it fell flat mostly because of technology. And that's another part of the script that they took off the recorded show. It was like we were talking about how MP3s killed CDs and eventually killed this poor guy's. He wanted to be a rock star and everything. He had a band, and it didn't succeed, and so he was stuck with this again. And that's all John C. Reilly's character Cap needed, was to be surrounded by another failure. His character Cap was a if I read this correctly, a failure, a deadbeat dad, somebody who just fell flat, and now he's trying to be an astronaut. Yeah. And he's come across another failure person, and yeah, you can imagine his reaction there.
What was it like to actually, like, one of your TV parents was Fred Grandy from Love Boat. What was he like to have as a TV dad? That must have been something for a kid like yourself that grew up on sort of the cartoons and comedy.
I'm like, oh my God, Gopher's my dad. And you gotta love, everyone loves Gopher. I think, to answer that earlier question, we didn't come up with a backstory, but we were coming up what to do with Cap after he had lost, he had fainted, he had lost consciousness. And we were either talking about either taking him home or ditching him or whatever. We eventually took him home. And that was improv'd.
And now we'll hear from Deandra Lyle. She joined us just a couple of weeks ago on the A24 project to discuss Moonbase 8. Here's a little bit about her experience on the show.
Your character is, like you highlighted, it's a proper professional, has the common sense that the other three lack. What was it like to play off of that kind of energy as the straight man, essentially, to these kind of, you know, the jokers in the pack, as it were?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was fun. Like I said, as long as I just followed their lead. You know, I think you can get caught up really in any kind of comedy. You can get caught up in the moment because they're funny. You know, I mean, they're funny people and that's what they do. And so when they're being serious, like for them, their characters are serious. It's even more funny. So luckily I didn't have too many like goops and slip ups where I started laughing in the middle of a take, you know? But yeah, I mean, everything, you know, in comedy is grounded in realness. That's what makes it funny. Like that's situational comedy because to those characters, these things are happening. These are very real. The circumstances and the stakes are high. You know, oh my gosh, I dropped a sandwich on the floor. This is the end of the world. You know, and to most people are like, oh, it's not a big deal. Make another sandwich, blow it off, whatever, you'll be fine. But to them, this is the absolute end of the world. You know, and that's what that comedy comes around, you know what I'm saying, even more. So everything is amplified, everything is elevated, you know. So when they had those moments, or if they were, you know, riffing and, you know, improvising, like I said, just staying on my straight and narrow, because my character was the straight character, not going too far off base of the script, but following them and playing along with them as much as I could.
There was so many moments that had me laughing. We'll obviously come to your smackdown of Rook in a moment. There's like the moments when you're like, you're trying to keep Skip back. Like a lot of that great physical comedy of like, I can almost imagine that parental side of like, no, give me some space. Give me some space. Uh-huh. Like the dishes video. Uh-huh. What were some of your kind of favorite kind of little moments and beats to play?
Oh, man. You know, they were all fun. Obviously, like the SmackDown, you know, the flip. And plus, I got to have a stunt double, so that's always kind of fun. And she did a great job. that was fun. You know what's funny is one of my favorite parts for, I guess, dialogue is actually towards the end when my character's getting called up to the moon, you know. And Skip's like, where are you going? And I'm like, to the moon. Yeah. You know, it's kind of one of those things, like, I'm going to the moon. Yeah. I'll see you there. You know, whatever. And it's like, all right, I'm out of here. I can't do this anymore. That was just a fun little piece of dialogue or moment, I guess, for me that I can really remember. But they were all fun. I mean, yeah, going into the quarantine, you know, and just having that, you know, which is so timely right now, right? The whole episode's called Quarantine, and then we had to like wear masks and all. I'm like, really? Like, maybe we were seeing the future. I don't know. You know, those moments are fun. The dish scene in the kitchen was fun. That was fun. It's like following the rules and doing this and doing that. You know, I do remember that one because, like I said, it's been a few years now, so I'm kind of going back in my memory bank. But that was a good one. I can't say all of them were fun. Sitting at the table talking about first aid and the medic and the doctor. You know, to Fred's character. You know, so you got this. Okay, so you can do this. You can do the, you know, examination and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, putting them in the hot seat. Yeah. That was fun. It was fun to kind of have that in a way, that dominance, I guess.
I suppose that dominance comes in when you finally crack. Rook is like, I could leave my wife and 12 kids. Like that could happen. Yeah. And you just like put him right down on the floor, foot on the throat. And like, it is like, we are going to insert the audio into this bit of like your dialogue, because it is just... such a
like, when I had to go off
my ass, you know, pasty face, you're this, you're that. Yep. It is like,
can a guy at least get a goodnight kiss before he goes to sleep?
Look here, I've been dealing with this my entire life. I know exactly who I am. I'm smart, I'm beautiful, and I don't give a damn about you, your penis, or anything you got to say with your pasty, white, chalky, Bible-thumping, nitwit ass. You don't look at me, you don't talk to me, you don't breathe the same air as me. Are we clear?
Yes.
Great. You have a good night.
What an outburst. Like, what goes through your mind as you tap into that? You've been straight-faced, you know, you've got with their nonsense, but in this moment, it just all comes out. What was that like to tap into?
I mean, I think everybody has, you know, different sides of them in real life. You know, we have our professional side and we have our, when you don't see us at work side, you know? And I think, like I said, she's a strong character and she's a woman of color too. So it's like, look here, I'm not going to deal with this. So she's dealing with men. So, you know, as a woman, you know, and if you're an attractive woman, you're going to, you know, through life have to deal with some not so much fun stuff and attention sometimes. And you want to be taken seriously. You know, you want respect. I'm here because I do a good job. I know I'm professional. I've worked hard, you know, and it's not about, you're not going to take advantage of me, you know, in ways that are inappropriate, you know, but I'm going to be respectful. I'm not going to try to read too much into what you're saying. And, you know, we can keep it cool and keep you at a distance. But if you cross that line, I'm going to let you know,
yeah.
You know? And so for, you know, it's kind of, you know, I have a daughter. So there's been times, you know, I'm her teacher. I'm around her all the time. I'm the one that kind of shows her how to walk through life, you know, and situations can arise in life where, you know, you pick and choose your battles. And that's one thing I try to explain to her. You know, not everything is worth your energy. You know, sometimes you just have to be the bigger person. You have to just let it go. But there are moments when you have to put your foot down and let people know you're not going to be walked over. You know, and something that I say as Deandra sometimes is like, I'm not a fighter. I don't like to argue. I don't like to do that. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to be no punk. So I will put my foot down if I need to. So that's kind of, I think, definitely what happened there. You know, she's very, you know, Alicia is like, here, I'm here to do a job. Okay, I'm let you guys slide. You're making these little comments, but I'm not really going to think anything of it. It's fine. Okay, we're going to do work that we're, but you step over that line, I'm going to let you know about yourself. And then it's back to the professional part. Yeah. You know, it's like, all right, we done? We good? We good? You got it? I don't have to say this again. Okay, carry on. You know, and that is an empowering moment, you know, because a lot of people are scared to stand up. A lot of people are worried about their job security. They're worried about, you know, their reputation or how people are going to perceive them, especially, you know, I always tell people we're still in a man's world. You know, we're in a white man's world. And that's what I tell people. That's ultimately still what it is. In the general scope. Now things are shifting and things are changing and we still have a long way to go, but as a woman walking in this world, as a woman of color walking in this world, sometimes people have to really, you know, step gently and or they feel like they have to. But at the end of the day, no, you should be able to say how you feel. You should be able to, you know, draw the line and boundaries and stand up for yourself, rightfully so, without there being an issue or repercussions because of that. You know, so it was great to be able to embody that, show that on a global scale, and hopefully that's empowering, you know, for people.
So yeah, thanks to Ted for joining us. So we'll have that interview coming up in the near future. So Dallas, what did you make of sort of our lead characters?
Well, obviously, my favorite one was John C. Reilly, because, you know, I just think John C. Reilly is a fantastic actor, and I think he's got that sort of sad sack quality, which is just so endearing and appealing, and he's just so earnest in everything he does. He just wants the best for himself, for the mission, and for his crew. And that's sort of partly, I guess, in that respect, I guess it's a similar sort of thing to like David Brent or Michael Scott, where, you know, he's slightly unaware of how ridiculous he is, but it all comes from a good place, really. He's got a good heart, and at least in that, and I think that's what makes it so funny. And I'm also kind of glad to see the back of the character in the first episode who was tormenting him, sort of thing. I think it was glad he sort of got his own back on, you know, in a way that way. Rook, I think, was a nice alternative. I think each character is unique and has a well-defined sort of backstory. I expect the second season will potentially go into more detail onto the fact that Rook's wife is clearly cheating on him with the local pastor, and Skip is good, and I think he's got the potential there with the I love the episode where you know, the with the he's potentially a Russian spy and John C. Reilly has to take him out and stuff like that. I thought that that was a great episode. And he's obviously living off the back of his dad being this NASA legend as well. So each of them has got reasons for wanting to be there and do this mission. And I think, yeah, they're all, I think even though each episode was very short and they had a very limited amount of time to sort of generate these characters, I think each one of them was really well sort of rounded, and you know what each one is doing there, why they're there, and yeah, I think the chemistry is going to continue long on into the second series if we get one.
It almost reminded me of one of the characters that I felt like I could see in these guys was Kenny Powers. I don't know if you ever watched Eastbound and Down, but sort of Kenny Powers was a guy who played in the baseball majors and has sort of found himself at the bottom of the ladder, and sort of, but the amusement obviously comes from he doesn't see what everyone else sees. He thinks he's just like one good game away from sort of getting back to the majors, getting back to the lifestyle he had. He doesn't seem to see it or acknowledge it, despite the fact everyone around them sees that. And I thought that was a really interesting sort of dynamic. And, you know, it's hard not to pity them, knowing sort of like they're never getting to the moon, it feels like. And yeah, I found it that kind of parallel really, really quite interesting. For me, Dallas, I want to know, what was your favorite episode of the six?
I think either the sort of either the quarantine episode. I always like quarantine episodes and things. I think they're inherently funny, but I think like the different reactions to them all sort of coming down with this illness, and sort of John C. Reilly sort of becoming sort of blubbery mess going on about his lemons, or the fact that Skip starts to sort of hallucinate and almost has like visions of himself as like his father and mother and stuff like that. I thought that was really, really good. But I think the is it the Feng Shui episode is my favourite, or the, I actually really enjoyed the sort of finale almost with the sort of the Wranglers and stuff like that, where they had to, where they basically come up with their Apollo 13 sort of round, you know, square box into a round hole sort of thing, where they need to basically, because of the previous Feng Shui episode where they've moved the base to get better reads out, and they've got better communications and stuff like this, but it turns out they've moved it straight into the path where these guys are almost doing a stampede of cows through there, and then they have to work out how to not only keep the base intact but also avoid killing any cows because the Wranglers are going to come back for them. And I thought it was a really sort of clever way of sort of showing that even though they've all got their differences, they were actually able to work as a team. And it did feel like a really triumphant moment, even if their celebrations are slightly muted, given the fact that, yeah, they're never going to the moon. But it, yeah, the final episode does lead on to this sort of thing where they do have nice, shiny new red jackets, but what is the reason of them being behind the base? It's surely not just to be testing new flavours of Snickers bars, is it?
No. So for me, my favourite episode, without a doubt, was the Visitors episode, where they meet their sort of SpaceX counterpart sort of just down the street in this kind of desert. And I just loved that. We sort of, obviously we know sort of moon-based team aren't qualified, they aren't getting to the moon, but it's like quite amusing to sort of see their delusion where they're like, those SpaceX guys, they think they're going to Mars. They're not going to Mars, but we're going to the moon. And I just love when they're like, they're showing them around like their ramshack tent and facility, and just like you can just see the contempt and sort of bewilderment on the sort of like the SpaceX team. Which another interesting sort of guest star was like Adam Lambert, like, which yeah, was truly bizarre to see him pop up. And also probably, I think she might actually be one of A24's most prolific actors now. We've got Ayla Shawkat, so we've got her now in Moonbase 8, First Cow, so another A24 project where it involves working alongside cows, 20th Century Women, Green Room, Life After Beth, if we're counting deleted scenes. So yeah, I really enjoyed that one so much. And just like, you know, their sort of enthusiasm about this idea about a merger with NASA and SpaceX, you know, the grassroots bottom-up idea, and sort of like, there's a romanticism about NASA that they still have where they're like, they're sharing the space food with each other. You know, it's very, very old school compared to how smooth and slick kind of the SpaceX one was. I just thought it was such a fun episode and probably my favorite one, where, you know, you see the pride that they have in the work that they do. Even if the best intentions and the brains aren't always there, it comes from a very sincere place, and that's always quite appealing to watch. And you automatically are in their corner when you think, screw those SpaceX guys and having all the good looks, the big ambitions, the best power packs. I'm in the corner of the NASA team.
Yeah, no, I'm because of the quality, the acting and the characters. I mean, they're just so endearing that you automatically side with them over the lackeys of Elon Musk or Elon Musk, as John C. Reilly keeps getting the name wrong as well. You know, just call them up and on one of your fancy phones, and we'll do a merger. We won't go direct to, you know, get NASA and Elon to discuss it. We'll do it ourselves. I thought it just sort of shows the naivety of the characters. But it, like you say, it all comes from a good place, and you just wish that they would get the opportunity to go to. Would they be successful on a moon mission? I mean, that is up for debate, but you would like for them to at least get a shot at it, wouldn't you?
So Dallas, what were some of the highlights of the season for you? I'm gonna get in there first in case you take any of these ones. So I love here's some of my favorite lines that had me belly laughing as I watched this in my bed. Nepotism is a great thing. That's why there's a word for it. It works. And you touched on it earlier, like these guys are getting like the rubbish jobs from NASA, and they're getting kind of you know, given a bit of a pat on the back of like, here's a new jacket. But like when they get told like sort of there's a new collaboration between NASA and the Mars chocolate company, where they're like to test the sort of Snickers new honey glazed maple bar, and they're like, it's a nightmare for the long-haired dog owners. Rook from a great line. What the first bit where I thought like I'm loving this show was when they're talking about, you know, they're bigging each other up, and they're like, we're members of the National Association of Space Astronauts, and they're like, no, it's the North American Space Association, no, it's the Nautical Astronomy Society of Adventurers, and actually I don't think it stands for anything, it's just a word. And you know, the episode where they're like they've got, I think it's the first episode where like they've got the problem with the water, and they're like, right, what water do we have here? And they're like, vegetable oil, olive oil, and no, you've got to add vinegar to oil to make it drinkable. And they're like, that's salad dressing. And in the final episode, one of the highlights was like, what scares cattle? And they talk about like leather manufacturers and things like that.
Actually, just, no,
like,
what about shoe manufacturers?
yeah, just stuff like that, where it's just, again, it's that sincerity where it's like, it's very straight faced, which is the type of comedy that I really like. Like, they don't realize that they are, you know, not the brightest at points, but it's coming from that good place, and it's just funny and endearing to watch as an audience. What were some of your highlights?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, that whole bit about the various types of water that they've got and various levels of how sanitary it is and stuff like that. And you sort of, John C. Reilly is just sort of good with his sort of thing when it being sort of confronted and questioned, what, you drink salad dressing? He says, yes, I do. If I get it in a little jug and I pour it over it, if I've got some left, yes, I will just sip it straight out of the jug, and it tastes very nice. And then they try some of it and stuff like that, where they sort of get drunk on the celebratory champagne because that's all that's left, and you get one of those sort of drunk episodes. I love that sort of bit. But yeah, it's just, there's so many just sort of wonderfully great and naive moments. So like the bit where Skip sort of wakes up in the morning and is trying to find out if he's actually sort of cut out his own tonsils, I think was a lovely bit of sort of physical comedy as well. And yeah, no, it's just a very funny show. When it turns out that what they assume is like raccoons or something stealing their recycling is just like this old hippie guy, and it turns out he's actually really nice and stuff like that. And the physical comedy, John C. Reilly actually sort of suffering from is from waking up from the fever inside this stranger's camper van as well and stuff like that. There's a lot of great sort of physical comedy in this show, I think.
Dallas, I'm going to pose this question to you because only you can properly answer this one. As we know, you're the man who invented the Uncut Gems board game.
Trademarked.
What is your take on,
What is your take on Quizlord? So it's obviously like a game in the show where it's like a mix of sort of Trivial Pursuit and Mousetrap. We sort of see that it has like a real mishmash of different concepts in the game. There's throw charms, spells, bridges, forests, Fortune of Calamity cards, with its trivia questions. What was your expert opinion on Quizlord as a game? And would you be up for getting behind and making that game a reality?
I would definitely play that game. 100%. It is very, very fiendishly difficult by the sounds of it, in the fact that John C. Reilly has to answer a question correctly in order to move off the space, but basically has to answer the same question correctly. So it's like, I don't know the answer. And it's like, well, you need to answer this question, but I need another question. Well, no, it says in the rules here that you have to answer this question. I mean, that's just like, and it sort of reminded me of the Cones of Dunshire from Parks and Recreation. Another, you know, made-up game, which is, the rules are incredibly intricate. I mean, someone clearly spent a lot of time creating a fake game for what appears on maybe sort of at the maximum on screen, maybe sort of 3 minutes, but it's just, as you would expect, you know, the people who work for NASA are meant to be incredibly smart, incredibly clever, so it makes sense that they would have an incredibly overtly intricate board game to play. Obviously tensions rise. I mean, I've seen families fall out over Monopoly, so obviously, you know, this sort of leads to the tensions coming to a head in this one. But I mean, I'm still amazed that Cones of Dunshire has not really had like a proper Kickstarter to have it created into a full game, because I'm sure a lot of people would buy it. And I have to say that, yes, I've already got the Green Knight RPG. I would happily buy a copy of this one if somebody made a Kickstarter of it. It's a bit too complex. I think you would need someone has clearly created probably the full set of rules and stuff like that. So I would leave it up to the creators of Moonbase 8 to do it justice. I'll happily stick to creating original games on Uncut Gems and maybe even an A24 version of Monopoly. I think that's more my speed at the moment.
It's revealed at the end that sort of they're being watched by sort of a shadow individual at NASA. There's a wall of monitors with all these different moon bases, and it's a kind of a tease potentially of a season two, that essentially our heroes are kind of in a bit of a lab, really. What did you make of this twist ending, and do you think there'll be a season two? Feeling is honestly probably not at the moment. It's been 2 years since the first season kind of came out. It was a bit of an effort, it seems, to get the show sold. Again, no idea why. It seems like it's difficult probably to get all of them together again for sort of like their scheduling. So I think we're only going to get a one and done with Moonbase 8. But do you think we're going to get a season two? And did you like the twist ending?
Well, if we get a second season, would it be Moonbase 8 2 or would it be Moonbase 9? Would they get moved to a second base, perhaps? But I mean, I understand why they put it in there. I mean, you know, they've got, it's clear to the point when they get the jackets and they're sort of celebrating getting the nice shiny jackets, that like that's just sort of to sort of fob them off, and the fact that they're, to make them think that they're going to maybe get to the moon, but they're not. They're just getting a nice shiny new jacket to wear around their moon base. But I can understand the hook of putting in that sort of final shot where it sort of pulls back into sort of security cam footage, and then a giant wall of TVs, and then someone's clearly monitoring the base, whether it is someone from NASA, is it a Russian sort of a spy sort of looking at them, is it just clearly a very innocent, we're just checking up on what these guys are doing, is it more of a sort of Truman Show, do they even work for NASA, maybe they've been tricked into working for someone else, who knows. There's lots of different ways that this could go, but I can understand that it's a hook to maybe try and get a second season to try and solve the mystery, to sort of expand on this. You know, I can just sort of see now, having said, you know, to get a second season, I've now got images of Alan Partridge or basically John C. Reilly asking someone, am I getting a second series, am I getting a second series, smell my space cheese. So I guess we'll have to see, but I think if anyone is watching the previously unnamed show, I'm going to come out and name it WandaVision, where a couple of Marvel superheroes are basically in a strange sitcom-esque world, but it's clear that people are monitoring them from the outside. So if you're watching, I watched basically the two in the same day. So basically there's a lot of similar parallels going on there. A group of people who are not entirely aware of what's going on being watched by a shadowy organization. So I guess we'll see what happens, but I'd be quite happy to sit through a second series and see where it goes. But if it is a one and done, I had a good time, and it's just unfortunate they never got to the moon. Similar to the crew of Apollo 13, though. So
yeah. So obviously we've watched a couple of A24 shows now. We've had Comrade Detective, Euphoria, Rami, and Moonbase 8. What's your kind of impression at this stage where it's like of A24's TV output? You know, we've still got other shows to explore and to take on and other seasons of shows to watch. Where does sort of Moonbase 8 kind of land for you? And are you enjoying sort of diving into the A24 TV show before we get hopefully a good run of films in the near future?
Well, I mean, I'm quite happy to binge watch the odd A24 show until we get to summertime and get the green light, hopefully. Fingers crossed it still goes out there. I'm still hoping that it goes to South by Southwest because I have an online digital pass for that festival. Oh, then I'd be lording it up over you for a few months, wouldn't I? But I think, I mean, in terms of quality, it probably goes for me at the moment, although I've only seen season one of Euphoria, I haven't seen specials yet. Euphoria, Rami, Moonbase 8, Comrade Detective. That's what it sort of sits for me at the moment. But I think it's clear to see from just those four shows that we've done that A24 are taking a very similar tack in their TV production as they are in their films, in that it's a very wide spectrum. You've got comedy, you've got drama, but Euphoria is very much a teen audience. Rami is looking at, you know, Egyptian American, sort of Muslim American audience. You've got Moonbase looking at the comedy. You've got Comrade Detective is a very specific type of comedy, which is also bringing in sort of foreign language and stuff like this. So again, they're not really pigeonholing themselves into doing one particular type of brand. I know that at some point we're going to be doing a lot of sort of one-off stand-up comedy specials, which they seem to do, but that's, I think, more coming out of the people that they're working with the likes of sort of Rami and stuff like that, have made one-off specials, and because of their links with A24 already, A24 have, I think it's like a combination between A24 and I think it's HBO that seem to have done a lot of those, so we'll see a lot of that. But there's a few other shows that we've got to go, and yeah, everything's different, everything's unique, and I'm glad that they're taking the same tactic as they are with their filmmaking. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. Apart from Comrade Detective, I think that's been only the weakest one sort of so far. I've both sort of like, it feels weird to be in a world where we're like comparing Moonbase 8 to Euphoria and Euphoria to Rami, but I've been really enjoying sort of the TV output, and it's been a nice sort of nice to be just diving into things like, you know, Euphoria is a continuing on show. You know, it feels like we've got these mini movies every time I watch an episode. And then you've got something like Moonbase 8 where it was 2 year wait to watch something in just over 2 hours in an afternoon. And that was great to have that as well. I really like the variety. And I'm excited to see which, you know, show we'll pick next to dive into. But yeah, I enjoyed Moonbase 8. And it's been, you know, to think we nearly didn't go into sort of some of the TV stuff, I'm so glad that we did now.
I guess we have lockdown to thank for that, I guess, because otherwise, yeah, no, we would have had Saint Maud last year at some point, and I'm sure a lot of other films, but you know, once things settle down, who knows, probably we're looking at towards the end of the year, isn't it, really, before the vaccination program gets to such a stage. Well, I guess now Biden's in, that they might actually have a proper chance over America of actually getting something sorted out. Apologies to anyone who doesn't like President Biden. But I think we're looking at things maybe getting back to some degree of normalcy towards the end of the year. And A24 can start getting through their back catalogue and getting things up before all the new films by the likes of Darren Aronofsky and Alex Garland, the Coen brothers, etc., wheedle their way onto the big slash small screens.
Well, thank you very much to everyone for joining us here on Moonbase A24 Project. It's been a pleasure to have you on again, and we'll talk to you again in the near future. Have a good one. Bye.